Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We dive into state politics this hour. Senator Billy Sutton joins us in a few moments to discuss his campaign to serve as South Dakota's 33rd governor. But first, we're joined by the Dakota Political Junkies for thoughts on the top headlines this week in state politics. Roger Whittle is with us. He's managing editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. Hey, Roger.
Hi, Lori.
Dana Ferguson is also with us. She's a watchdog government reporter for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Hi, Dana.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to both of you. And let's start with the big news of the day, which is DACA and President Trump's call for Congress to take 6 months to figure out a pretty complex problem. Roger, where do you want to begin with this as it relates to the South Dakota congressional delegation and their views on this?
Well, they pretty much said they're in favor of the move that the president made, but they've kind of been silent on how they feel about what a solution would be or a fix for the situation. And, you know, 6 months for Congress, that's just like a couple of days, right?
So right.
It should not be a problem.
Dana, give us some details about the statements that they released and then some of the follow-up questions that maybe they weren't quite either prepared or willing to answer.
Sure. Well, I reached out to each of them yesterday by way of their spokespeople. They were all on the way back out to Washington from South Dakota after being on a recess. And I don't know that they were thrilled to have to address this news again. They've expressed before that they would like to have more of a light shown on the work that they're doing every day in Congress, potentially more so than having to follow up with the things the president says or some of his actions. But they were all very supportive of the president's decision to get rid of the DACA policy, which was approved by executive action under the Obama administration. They all had very, very similar lines, essentially saying the way that it was approved initially was unconstitutional and that it wasn't passed in the legislature, but was instead a policy passed by executive action. So now it just becomes a question of whether they're going to be willing to support any sort of replacement that comes through legislation. Basically, each of them in their own way was vague about what they would like to see. There were no comments about whether these individuals should be deported or if that policy should stand but in formal legislation. So just a lot of questions. Rather than answers yesterday.
Roger, do you think there's an appetite among South Dakota voters or constituents to really deal with an issue like this? Certainly there are people in the state who are impacted directly, but we're not a state like Nevada or California where this would be top of mind. Do you think South Dakotans care about DACA, or do they really want to see tax reform, for example?
Well, I'm sure it's not really high on their list, but I think if they look at it closely, it probably should be, because one of the major problems that we have in South Dakota these days is lack of a workforce. Mm. I know in Watertown especially, there are jobs everywhere and nobody to come and fill them. And this is basically taking a segment of the population away from that whole equation that you can't work in the state anymore. So, I think they should, and I think it'll be interesting to see what our congressional people would accept as a replacement for it. It seemed to be working very well. We're talking about people who came here as small children, and this is basically the only country they've ever known. I was reading stories about some people who don't even speak Spanish that are part of this program and are under the threat of being deported back to Mexico. So it's going to be very interesting to see what our congresspeople have to say about this issue once they're able to get their thoughts together a little
right.
more.
So, Dana, quoting from your story in the Argus Leader, you said all three South Dakota delegates have said they want to see tougher security at the U.S.-Mexico border, which would include a wall, better implementation of the immigration laws already on the books, and new policies were necessary. What do you think the smart questions about immigration are in this state? You know, listening to what Roger had to say about workforce availability, workforce development.
Well, I think that now the three of them are going to have to tread fairly carefully. Obviously, South Dakota is a state where President Trump won very handily. So in speaking to voters here, I think you would get the sense that voters want to see some stricter immigration policies on the books. But there is also a pretty strong desire to help protect policies that allow for visas for farm workers or agricultural workers. They're very needed in South Dakota, and I think all three of South Dakota's delegates agree on that, and they want to keep those visa programs in place. I think, as Roger said, it's really important that we have policies that continue to put workers in South Dakota where they're very desperately needed. And now they're going to have to start having conversations about the border wall, how it gets funded. They've all expressed at various times that they're pretty supportive of that proposal. Representative Noem has voted to support that proposal. And now it just comes down to sorting out the details of what they're willing to pass and what would be something they just can't agree with at this time.
Interesting to look ahead and see what happens next. Let's move on to Doug Barthel in Sioux Falls, and we'll start with Dana Ferguson because he's headed to Pierre. Tell us a little bit about the newest House representative and how he got there.
So Doug Barthel, who is going to become a House representative, was appointed. We got the announcement over the weekend that the governor had appointed him, the former police chief here out of Sioux Falls. He will replace former representative Don Hager, who announced in June that he was going to leave his post to become the new state director for Americans for Prosperity. So I got to chat with Barthel a little bit yesterday. He sounds excited about the job. He feels as though his past experience working with various city administrations, counselors, and just different government entities will help him in that position. He sounded optimistic about the job and excited. So it'll be interesting to see what he brings out to Pierre. He was pretty straightforward about saying he's not going to be the one sort of getting in the middle of every fight, but he's not going to be one to just stand by and let things happen either. So It will be interesting to see what sort of position he'll take out there in Pierre.
Dana, did you get a sense that he had a strong public safety agenda he was taking with him, or how his work as police chief was going to influence him more administratively, do you think?
There wasn't a whole lot of emphasis on his part about whether that would shape the policy that he wants to see. I know that he'll become at least the third former or current police officer serving out in Pierre, so they could soon create their own caucus. There are also many former judges, attorneys, who've worked pretty closely with issues of justice, so he would have a pretty strong support system out there if he wanted to bring any sort of legislation. But it didn't sound right away as though that's his chief focus. He spoke more about a desire to make sure the state has enough revenues coming in and making sure that everyone gets funded. I imagine it would be a priority of his to make sure that police get the funding that they need to do their jobs and protect the cities that they are serving. But there weren't a whole lot of specifics yesterday on his end.
Roger, do you have impressions of Doug Barthel? Have you heard the name? Do you know who he is? And what would you look for with him replacing Don Hager? Do you think they're similar in philosophy or style?
Well, everything I learned about Mr. Barthel, I learned from Dana. So
So the rest of the state has to learn who he is. He's a Sioux Falls guy.
Yes. From what I read about him, I think he's going to be a little more less partisan, if you will. And one thing that struck me in one of the stories was that he said he's worked with a lot of, in his roles in law enforcement, he worked with a lot of government agencies, so he knows how government works, which I think can only be a good thing for a new incoming lawmaker.
Right. Speaking of how government works, a straw poll at the state fair. Roger, do you want to kick it off and tell me how much, how much stake should we even put in something like that?
Well, I'm a big fan of straw polls.
How come?
I love them. We have one in the public opinion that has been going on for many, many years before I was even born. And it's eerily canny, eerily accurate.
Really?
But so I'm a big fan of them. And I was looking at the results of this one. I'm not sure, how we can gauge any accuracy on this or not. I was frankly surprised by some of the results in this poll. For Congress, we had Dusty Johnson well ahead of Chantel Krebs, 54% to 45%, something like that. So, and I was expecting that race to be a little closer than it was. And of course, this isn't a poll or anything; it's a straw ballot.
Right.
And then for governor, I was even more surprised that I was expecting to be a very close race between Marty Jackley and Kristi Noem, and the attorney general's at 58% to 41% for Noem. So it was some pretty eye-opening results. How much stock we should put in them, I think that's to be determined.
Dana, your thoughts? Marty Jackley receives 1,019 votes. Second place, U.S. Representative Kristi Noem was 716. What's the significance of that at the state fair?
Well, I think it gives you a snapshot into what that group of voters is thinking. I think there are fair arguments to be made that your folks who are walking up and talking to the candidates or talking to party leadership at the fair are likely to be your primary voters. But in speaking with Republican State Chair Dan Lederman yesterday, he kind of made the argument for it as well as the argument against it. He said it gives you a good show of how voters are feeling on a given day. It shows you how well those campaigns are able to organize and get people out to the fair or just out to that table to cast their ballots. And that can be indicative of what we can expect next spring. But at the same time, it's just a snapshot. It's not your whole state. It's not everyone preparing to cast their ballots next spring. So it's one indicator. It's not the indicator. And it's always fun to talk about, if nothing else.
Roger, is it an indicator of early organization or not? I'm thinking about the parade I was at in Mitchell this summer, and Marty Jackley was there shaking every, we were three deep lawn chairs, and he went all the way back to the third row, shook every single hand, introduced himself, walked on, and then he came through again when the parade was, halfway through. You saw him again shaking the front row of hands again, asking for votes. And, Kristi Noem wasn't there that day. Are we seeing that Marty Jackley has an organized campaign early and he's off to a strong start? Or is it this just more of a random sort of snapshot, like Dana said?
I was just thinking about that, actually. Because he was in Watertown for the 4th of July parade here, and it was the same situation. He was working the crowd like I've never seen him do it before, and even came up and talked to me for a while, which...
Me too.
and I was just there taking pictures for the newspaper, and he asked me, how do you think the campaign's going for governor? And I told him at that point, well, I think your main advantage is that you're not a member of Congress.
Right. Doesn't hurt right now. Yeah.
Right. But no, I think, he's been out there working hard and meeting a lot of people. And, when you meet Marty Jackley face-to-face and talk to him, he seems a lot different than when you see him on the TV news. He seems much more personable and like a really nice guy. So I think that he's a great campaigner, and I think that is helping, especially in a state fair situation where everybody is there to have a good time.
Right.
And he can be a good guy to just chat with.
The thing I remember most about that parade day was it was so hot, and someone told him, "You better slow down and take care of himself." And he said, "No, I'm an athlete. I'm ready for the long haul." And I thought, he just turned that.
I remember that too. It was the same way in Watertown. I was there about ready to keel over.
Right.
He looked he was running, and I was standing there, and he's running up and down Main Street for 2 hours and just looked fresh as a daisy. So,
and I will say that the person next to me said, good job, you're doing a great job, you know, in his current role. And then as soon as he left, she said, oh, he'll never beat Christy. So,
so you never know.
So you just never can tell. But boy, I love a good parade. So we'll leave that there. Dana, let's finish up here with can we finally put to bed the phrase gear up scandal and call it something else? You have a an article about what you learned this week about embezzled money and why it makes a difference. Where do you want? Let's begin with this phrase gear up scandal, because it's not quite the best phrase.
Right. Well, we learned in a couple of hearings, state legislative hearings last week, that while it's been a very, very common name for what we think of when we talk about the financial schemes that went on at Mid-Central Educational Cooperative out in Platt, that it might not be the best thing to call it. And that is because a state legislative auditor general, Marty Ginden, said a lot of the money that was stolen, in fact, was not gear up money as had initially been thought, but instead it was money that came from the educational cooperative, and that means that it came from other school districts in central South Dakota. So while a lot of the investigation and the GOAC committee's efforts have centered around getting more information about gear up contracts or different things like that, the auditor general said, you know, that is not where that money came from. We know that all the gear up money is accounted for. It might have been used or funneled, but it's all been replaced at this point. So it raises questions about what GOAC's authority will be moving forward, if they can ask more questions about the gear up contracts, or if they'll be able to bring in individuals who worked on those contracts but were not state employees at the time or might not be now.
Roger, if the GOAC committee doesn't have the authority to ask some of those questions, who does, and why does it matter?
Well, I think if it's not the committee, it would have to end up in court, from what I understand. And this committee can ask people to come in and testify. They just can't force them to. So I'm sure they will keep trying to dig, even if they don't have the, you know, the legal authority to subpoena people. So, you know, a long time ago you asked us if we were ever going to see the end of this and get all the questions answered, and I think that question is still up in the air at this point.
Right. Dana, what else did you learn that clarified things as far as the relevance of where the money's at and who's holding the bag then?
Right. Well, there was additional clarification about Scott Westerhaus, who passed away in the murder, suicide, and fire back almost 2 years ago now. And a lot of the blame, or what we've been able to see in documentation, it basically pins a lot of the guilt on him for having taken about $1.4 million. The committee is still trying to figure out how much the Department of Education knew about some of those issues at Mid-Central before the cooperative got the Gear Up contract back in 2012, and what was done about it at the time to sort of probe that problem. There were two sets of emails from former department employees that came out just because the GOAC committee asked for that information that we had not seen before. And it was important to see that because it brings to our attention that Department of Education employees had knowledge of some kind about problems going on with the Gear Up grant. And there are mixed assessments of whether or not they really acted on those.
Roger, thoughts about Secretary of Education Melody Schaap? She's saying conflicts of interest. Maybe, you know, how is she responding to some of this notion that there were concerns years before?
I really can't answer that question because I'm not that familiar with her role. I know I've seen some some stories where she actually knew stuff a long time ago and kind of dismissed it, and now it's coming back to haunt her a little bit. But, I'll have to pass on that question.
Dana, final thoughts on Melody Shop and what happens next?
I don't know that any of us completely know what happens next. I imagine that her involvement in this will remain in question as long as GOAC continues to follow up on it, as long as the cases in court continue. But without a better open records law, without additional information about exactly what was going on behind the scenes, it's very difficult to know whether there was any sort of wrongdoing. We've heard from the secretary, we've heard from the governor's administration about what was done to really prevent any sort of wrongdoing at MidCentral. Once they heard that things were not going well there, they've said since 2015 really that they didn't see it as any sort of criminal act. They thought it was a lot of incompetence in managing the books there, but they were working on helping them, and whether or not that was enough, I guess it's hard to say. I don't know that there will be any move by the governor's administration or by others to get the secretary to step down. I don't think it's her intention to do so, but a lot of questions yet.
Dana Ferguson is a Watchdog Government reporter for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Roger Whittle, managing editor for the Watertown Public Opinion. Roger, thanks so much for being here. Always a
pleasure.
Dana, thank you as well. See you next time.
Thank you, Lori.